So this Sunday meditation group has been meeting since April of 2020. At the beginning of the pandemic, we started this group. Been meeting every Sunday since then. I've been reflecting on what we've been talking about during this time. And as I've reflected on what I've taught and what we've talked about, three themes in particular come to mind. The first is refuge, the importance of having refuge, developing refuge. You know, these are things that, of course, are important during times of difficulty. It could be argued that the human experience in and of itself is difficult and challenging. So refuge, learning to develop and rely on a refuge was the first theme. Second theme was to learn to bring awareness to what we're experiencing in terms of the different emotions, the different ways that we might be struggling with our experiences, if it's the experience of the pandemic and anything else that we might be caught or entangled in. The practice of bringing awareness, a simple awareness, to what's arising for us. And of course, over the last few years, I've used that acronym ABC. When a particular emotion, a particular mental quality, something that we're grappling with arises, bring a simple awareness to it just for a few moments, then go to the breath and have compassion. And then the third theme is developing the ability to turn to the happiness that's always there, to turn to what we call true happiness, a happiness that's reliable and always there, regardless of what the situation is, regardless of whether there's a pandemic, regardless of whether there's difficulty in life, regardless of whether we're struggling or suffering or we're sick or we're aging or we're dying, to develop this ability to turn to the happiness that's always there. So there's different forms of refuge. I'll say a few things about developing this ability, the importance of the practice of establishing refuge, being able to establish refuge. There's different forms of refuge that that we learn to rely on. Refuge in wise beings, of course, is one of the most important, what we might call external forms. So this group was really established as a refuge in April of 2020 as a place where we could go for refuge. Ultimately, of course, it's important for us to develop an internal refuge, the refuge inside, the refuge within, and the breath is our primary internal refuge, our primary internal refuge. So to learn to rely on this refuge within with the breath, which is of course a refuge that we learn to develop in meditation practice. But it's so important to have an internal refuge and to use that refuge. Over the years, I've given all kinds of talks on all the effort that we make into developing a refuge, but then we don't use it. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you build a house in the country, but then you never go there. You know? We learn to develop this internal refuge and then to use it. Be a refuge unto yourself. Be a refuge unto yourself, the Buddha said. He really made that point, of course, when he was dying. And he told his disciples, you have to learn to be a refuge unto yourself. You don't need me. Be a refuge unto yourself. Remember what I've taught you. but be a refuge unto yourself. So sometimes this word refuge, I know for me, can have, it can be a cause for a little bit of a misunderstanding, because I think sometimes we think of a refuge as a running away from things, but it's really about having a skillful relationship to things. So when we talk about refuge, it's a refuge from the, what we might call the world. That's a term that we use a lot in the Buddhist world, in the Buddhist realm. Refuge from the world, or the term I've been using lately is refuge from the conditioned realm. So the breath is a refuge from the things of the world. If it's a pandemic, or if it's different relationships, or if it's the experience of our job or whatever, our work, it's a refuge from the world. It's a refuge from our involvement, you know, because there's a world, the world, and then there's our involvement in the world. There's the conditioned things, and then our involvement in conditioned things. So we're disinvolving ourselves, or disengaging, or disentangling ourselves from conditioned things. In large part what this means is our refuge is a refuge from our, the term the Buddha uses is greed and distress with reference to the world. So our refuge is a refuge from the ways that we entangle ourselves and condition things. As the teaching, of course, describes, aversion to that which we find displeasing and desire for that which we find pleasing that we don't have. So refuge, again, is not denying the world or not denying the conditioned things. It's not pushing away or turning away from those things, but it's putting them to the side. We're aware of conditioned things. We're aware of our involvement in conditioned things. We're aware, in fact, of our entanglement in conditioned things, but their space. But their space. So one of the things that I think is really interesting for me in reflecting on what we've been talking about so much here over the last almost 3 years now is they all entail making space. They all entail learning to have space and understanding the benefits that we come to know when there is space and the importance of space, and that so much of what we're learning to do in practicing the Dharma is learning to make space, is learning to make space. So we're not trying to get rid of things, we're trying to develop space. And that's what we're doing when we're taking refuge or establishing refuge. So we're aware of experience, we're aware of the world, we're aware of our involvement and sometimes our entanglement in the world and in conditioned things, but there's space. So there's a skillful relationship. So sometimes we call this skillful relationship a non-entangled relationship, a non-entangled relationship with things. Now, of course, the breath is a thing. The breath is actually a conditioned thing. The breath is a conditioned thing, but it's internal. So it's not dependent on things that are external to us. So as a refuge, it's a skillful refuge. It's a conditioned experience. The body is conditioned, the breath is conditioned, but what we learn to do in establishing refuge from the world and conditioned things, the conditioned realm, is we use elements of that which is conditioned as in a skillful way. It's in a skillful way. So we don't push away conditioned experience. You can't do that. You know, that would be annihilation. We don't push away the body. What we learn to do is, and of course, at some point we let go of the body, but The ability to do that requires much time and effort and understanding. So we use the body, we use the breath in a skillful way. We use this aspect of what's conditioned, our conditioned experience, as a refuge. So that's why the breath and concentration isn't the goal, but it helps us get to the goal. It's part of the path. The path is fabricated. The path is conditioned. It leads to the unfabricated. But you have to have a path to get to the goal. So the breath is elemental to the Buddha's path. It's elemental. That's why the Buddha said, if you can develop the breath, the path will open up for you. So the breath is conditioned, but it's reliable. So it's a resting place. It's a resting place. It's a resting place. When we go to the breath, we make space. We make space. We make space. There's space between the breath, ourselves, and the conditioned realm. So this capacity to make space, and then importantly, to maintain space, because it's one thing to have some space, it's another thing to be able to maintain space, to maintain space. The capacity to maintain space is equanimity. So equanimity is a quality of inner strength, that I can establish some space from my experience and maintain that space. So equanimity is a factor of concentration. So the ability to maintain space, if it's, we're thinking about something, we go to the breath, we're thinking about the pandemic, we're thinking about our work, we're thinking about a relationship, there's an emotion that comes up, we go to the breath. If there's equanimity, we can keep the attention on the breath, and there's some space between the breath and the conditioned phenomena. So our capacity to maintain the space depends on equanimity, which is a factor of concentration, and we develop that through meditation. That's sort of the challenge, right? Ajahn Lee would talk about this all the time. This is the challenge, or this is where the effort gets put in meditation practice. It's like we need to have space. We need to learn to develop space so that we can understand our experience and relate to experience in a skillful way and live our lives in a skillful way. But our capacity to have space and to maintain space depends on concentration, which depends on meditation, which requires, and I'm going to use the P word here, practice, requires effort, So that's kind of, that's where the real effort goes in, and this is why we make this effort. This is why we make this effort, so that we can have equanimity, so that we can have space, so that we can have a skillful relationship to our experience, so that we're able to understand how to relate to our experience, so that we're able to make the most of our lives. So when we're taking refuge, it's sort of this process of just taking a step back, right? Taking a step back. So meditation in and of itself is taking a step back. We took a step back for a half an hour today and meditated. Hopefully every day we take some time to take a step back from our lives. It's a very, it's that very, outward physical process of taking a step back from our lives. Or if we go on a retreat, that's even a more extravagant, if you will, taking a step back. So I mentioned before we began today that I scheduled a couple of day-longs in New York, and I'll probably do at least one online day-long as well. So we have a couple of day-longs where we take a step back. I always find, it's like I always need that so much. Once a month, let me just take a step back for a day and put aside my worldly concerns and just practice for a day with other beings. It's hard to do on your own, right? But with other beings, we can do it. We can do it together. It's joyful, even though it's challenging. And of course, we have a longer retreat that I'm teaching in April, which is like 8 days of taking a step back. 8 days of taking a step back. And that's very powerful, because it's so important for us to learn to establish refuge, to take a step back from things, to take a step back from things. Ultimately, you know, this taking a step back is something that we have to do in real time in all postures. In real time and in all postures, you know, the meditation, the retreats are ways of developing this skill of taking a step back, but ultimately it has to be brought into the flow of life, what I call natural meditation. But, you know, that just means that, you know, it's in the natural setting of our lives that we need to learn to apply these skills and to establish refuge. I remember years and years ago, I was at the Wat Metta, Metta Forest Monastery, and I was there for quite a while. It was about a month. And, you know, you're talking about taking a step back and taking refuge. I mean, here, literally, you got to, some of you have been there, you know, it's like a 20-minute drive up a hill, like, you know, on this little narrow road to get to the top of the mountain. And, you know, you're really taking a step back from the things of the world. And I remember at the, you know, the last day or so of the retreat saying to the abbot, Tanasara Bhikkhu, Ajahn Jeff, I said, you know, I've been here for almost a month, you know, now I'm going back to the world, back to New York, back down the mountain, onto the plane, back to New York City, back to my place in Manhattan. You know, do you have a suggestion for me? You know, in his typically succinct way, he said, you know, put up a force field between you and your experience. You know, let there be a force field. I immediately thought of like Star Trek. And I mean, I could appreciate to some extent what he was saying, but I didn't really quite get it. It sounded almost like you're pushing away things away, or you're cutting things off, like a force field. It's like, you know, block yourself off from all that experience. You know, what he was saying, of course, was let there be some space. Have a non-entangled relationship, you know, or be an observer. Let there be space between you and your experience of New York City and your work and the people in your lives. You know, maintain space. I think part of the reason, you know, and this is probably close to 20 years ago, maybe not quite, when I had that interchange with him at the end of the retreat, I mean, I think part of the reason was I didn't really quite understand what it was to have space, you know? So it's hard to kind of, you know, somebody says, well, have space. You know, I don't know that I really quite understood what it was. I mean, the only way that we really understand what it is to have space, I mean, I can talk about it, but, you know, you have to have that experience of what it is to have space. So we take a step back and we sort of live, you know, in the world, but with some remove in a non-entangled way with our experience. And of course, this refuge that we're developing through breath meditation practice is an easeful abiding. It's an easeful refuge, right? It's a good home for the mind. So, you know, we develop this ease again in breath meditation practice by developing the jhana qualities, the qualities of ease and internal pleasure. We develop the breath. So even, you know, when we're in the midst of our lives, when we're walking down the street or we're at work or in a relationship or whatever, you know, we're, and we connect to the breath, you know, we can find hopefully that easeful breath to some extent. The breath conditions the body. The breath conditions the body. So we begin to feel some ease in the body. The breath conditions the central nervous system. The breath conditions the mind. Okay? So, you know, this is our refuge. It's an easeful refuge. An important aspect of the ease that we experience when we use the breath as a refuge, when we take abiding in the breath and make space, is we experience the ease of non-entanglement. We experience the ease of non-entanglement. You know, entanglement, you know, is fraught. You know, entanglement, if we're entangled with an external situation, a relationship or something at work, if we're entangled in our thoughts and emotions about a situation, you know, there's the situation and then there's just the being entangled. you know, being entangled in something is painful. Right? Just the being entangled, taking away the content of what we're entangled with, just the being entangled in any experience is painful. And really, that's the greatest pain of dukkha, you know, is just the being entangled, because we're not free. You know, we're not free, and it's painful, and we're holding on, and it's painful, just the act of holding on. So when we separate out, when we make some space and go to the breath, you know, we free ourselves of entanglement, you know? So in and of itself, you know, this quality of non-entanglement is easeful. So when we are entangled, we learn to go to the breath. When we are entangled, when we're caught in a thought world or in an emotion, we can also, as part of what we learn to do as students of the Dharma, we can also bring awareness to the emotion. We can bring awareness to the way in which we're entangled. You know, and again, over the last couple of years, we've used that acronym ABC. So if we are entangled in worry or fear or anxiety or dissatisfaction or disappointment or whatever it is, vis-a-vis some situation, we learn to bring awareness to that emotion, if you will, that mental quality, if you will. Just a simple awareness, right? A simple awareness. We've talked about this so much, right? A simple awareness of the experience of emotion, entanglement in the body for just a few seconds. You know, and one of the things, of course, that we've emphasized so much in bringing awareness to an emotion, to a mental quality in the body, is we're just bringing awareness to it, but we're not analyzing it, right? So, you know, there's non-analysis, right? So we're just, okay, there's dissatisfaction, there's disappointment, there's anxiety, there's worry. Label is good. Label is good. Labels are always good because labels help you disidentify. Labels help you disidentify. Labels help you create space, right? But you have to kind of be careful. Is that dissatisfaction or disappointment? Oh, I'm not really sure. So, you know, you have to learn to be very succinct with your labels, but they help you create space. Labels help you create space. So when we bring awareness to the emotion, we're making space. You know, we're making space. This is one of the most important aspects of bringing awareness to the emotion, to the state of entanglement, is we're making space. So instead of being in it, entangled in it, we're observing it. We're taking a step back from it and observing it. You know, as the Buddha said, like one person looking at another. Like one person looking at another. So we make that shift. We make that shift from being in it to taking a step back and observing it. Sometimes we use the term duality. There's a duality. Instead of being enmeshed or entangled with it, we separate out from it. And there's the observer, the awareness of the experience, and the experience. So we have to practice this. You know, again, this is one of those things like refuge and having space by using the breath that you have to practice with. You know, it's a skill. So at first it's like, oh, I don't know how to bring awareness to something. You know, can you explain it a little bit more? Well, you know, I can, but, you know, it's something that you just have to practice. You have to practice. You have to really get to know what it's like to bring awareness to an experience, to really get to know what that's like. And again, that's something that I can't tell you. You know, it's like I can't describe to you music or dancing. You know, you've got to dance or you've got to listen to the music yourself. You know, it's the same thing with knowing what it's like to bring awareness to an emotion, to an experience of being entangled. You know, to look at something with space. Only way you can truly understand what that is by practicing. You know, and once you start to understand what it is, then it's kind of one of those things that you got it. You got it. So when there's awareness of an emotion, if it's fear or anxiety or worry, we're making space. You know, we're disentangling. We're disentangling. So it's a state of non-entanglement. When there's space, you know, particularly if we can maintain the space and if the space is pure, you know, awareness can be awakened. There can be what, you know, Ajahn Chah would refer to as awakened awareness. So, you know, this awakened awareness, this insight, this wisdom that we have, that we develop when there's space, you know, sees, understands. It's an understanding, you know. It's like, I can tell you, you can disentangle yourself from this emotion, but when you bring awareness to it and create space, then you begin to develop this insight. You know, this is when awareness becomes awakened, because then you begin to develop this insight that, oh, I can disentangle. I can disentangle. That's so much different than me telling you that you can disentangle. You know, you taking a step back and observing and bringing awareness to an experience and disentangling yourself from it, and then seeing that you can disentangle from an experience like worry or sadness or dissatisfaction, that's insight. It's like, oh, I can disentangle from this. Oh, this is what it's like when I disentangle. Oh, when I disentangle and I just bring awareness to the experience, there's no suffering, there's no pain. We begin to see, oh, what I've been entangled with is something that I don't have to be entangled with. It's not who I am, it's just an experience. But all these experiences that we have, all these insights, I should say, that we have, are insights that we have when there's space, right? Insight occurs when there's space, when there's some equanimity. You know, this is, you know, this is a very central cause, and you know, I mean, it has to be concentration for insight. Well, what does that mean? There has to be equanimity. What does that mean? There has to be space. You know, the more that space is pure, you know, not afflicted with your analysis of your experience or your wanting to get rid of your experience, the more opportunity there is for insight, awakened awareness. You know, when we bring awareness to an experience, like an emotion, we get to know the quality of awareness. We begin to understand what awareness is. We see that awareness itself is unimpinged, it's free. It's free. The B, we go to the breath, we maintain space. And the C, if there's space, we can connect to the heart, we're able to connect to the heart and have compassion for ourselves in light of the emotion that we're entangled with. When space is developed, when we learn to be able to take a step back from our experience, when we learn to be able to maintain space, we can turn to the happiness that's always there. We can turn to the happiness that's always there. The third theme that we've worked with, that I've taught so much over the last, it's been a blessing. So, you know, I mean, this is one of those odd blessings, you know, that you're in a situation that's very difficult, but it really, you know, like a pandemic, but it, you know, or life, you know, but it really kind of leads us into being able to make a more assiduous effort to truly understand and apply the teachings of the Buddha. So when we have space, we can turn to the happiness that's always there. When we're entangled, we can't see that, you know? I mean, fixation is the highest form of entanglement. You know, when we're fixated on a circumstance, on an emotion like worry or sadness or fear, that's all we know. Our world is limited to that experience. When we create space, when we can take a step back from conditioned things, right? We're taking a step back from conditioned things. If it's the pandemic, if you want to think of it that way, or if it's our thoughts about it, or the different emotions, or any other experience in life, or any other experience of emotion, or mental fabrication, any other fabricated experience, when we can take a step back from it, when there's space, we sort of have this wider field. in my first book, The Skill of Living, I use that quote by Thoreau quite a bit. The universe is wider than our views of it. You know, the universe is very wide, but we're just focused on one little point, my dissatisfaction, my despair, what's wrong with my life, what's wrong with the world, etc. When we can take a step back, there's this wider field and we're able to discern, you know, seeing and turning to the happiness that's always there is a function of discernment, right? Wisdom is the third noble truth. We're able to take a step back. We're able to see when there's space, the quality of happiness, or if you want to call it freedom, or if you want to call it peace or goodness, that's always there. I've talked about it as being a quality in and of itself of awareness, or what the teacher Ajahn Fuwang calls awareness itself. Many teachers call it that, awareness itself. So when there's enough space, we're able to discern this quality of happiness that's always there. You know, when there's space, the quality of true happiness, you know, awareness is evident. You know, the word in Pali is sanditika. It's a word that you hear a lot in the Pali suttas and the chants, sanditika. It means self-evident, immediately evident. You know, I mean, these things are not evident to us because there's no space. You know, when there's space, you know, the happiness that's always there is sanditika. It's like right there. It's like right there. And of course, the other word, if we're using our Pali today, good Pali words to know, is akaliko. You know, this quality of happiness is akaliko, which means ever-present. It's always there. It's part of the truth. It's always there. It's always there. We just can't see it. We just can't see it. Another way to think about akaliko is it's unconditioned. It doesn't change. It's timeless. It's timeless. I've talked a little bit, and I'll end with this little anecdote. I've talked a little bit over the past months about, you know, living in Queens over the last year or so, and living kind of right down the road from the first apartment that I lived in when I first moved into the city when I was a young man. Some 43 years ago, and it's been a difficult experience, but it's also been an illuminating and an enlightening experience. And you know, as I've kind of walked through those streets, you know, I've reflected, you know, on that time when I was a young man, 43 years ago, and you know, I reflected on what it was like for me then, and how at that time of my life there was a not perhaps so clear or not perhaps so focused upon understanding, but there was an understanding of a wish for a greater happiness in life, and there was some understanding through my own experience of that quality of happiness. There was an inclination toward, and this is what we're asked to develop, to turn towards this happiness that's always there. There was an inclination to do that, and at times I was able to do that, so I was in touch with that. I was in touch with that to some extent. It's like, I want a greater happiness in this life. I don't want, you know, these happinesses of the material world, of, you know, the pleasures of the world and material things and status and praise. I want this true happiness, this greater happiness, this deeper spiritual truth, you know, and there was some sense of that, you know, there was some being able to touch into that happiness, that true happiness. And, you know, it's been just so interesting, you know, in walking through that neighborhood, you know, in those streets these days, and touching into that again, You know, and of course, I lost sight of that. You know, I was 25 years old, and I lost any vision of that. I was so focused on the things of the world and the conditioned realm for so long. And then I came to the Dharma and began to start to turn to the happiness that's always there. And recently, as I've walked those streets, you know, I've turned to that happiness and have been able to touch into it. And, you know, the thing that's so been so profound to me is that it's the same. You know, it's the same. You know, that quality of happiness is unconditioned. It's timeless. That quality of happiness, of freedom, of goodness, of truth, Dhamma, is the same now. You know, 43 years later, it's the same. It hasn't changed. It hasn't changed. It's timeless. It's unconditioned. It's unconditioned. Everything else has changed. The body, God knows, has changed. You know, all the buildings and everything else in the world has changed. Everything has changed. That has not changed. And that's been so profound for me to see that, that that does not change. That's the one thing that is timeless. So our practice is to turn to that happiness that's akaliko, that's ever-present, that's timeless, that's unconditioned. That's the ultimate refuge. You know, that's the ultimate refuge, the Dhamma within. That's the ultimate refuge that we seek in this practice. So our practice, though, is to make space so that we can know that and turn to that happiness that's always there. As we make space, we begin more and more to know that happiness, to turn to it, to see it. So that when there is difficulty, you know, and this is the teaching that I suggested so much over the past few years, when there is difficulty, like a difficulty of a pandemic, or all the difficulties and challenges that we come to in our lives, can we turn to see the happiness that's timeless, the happiness that is ekaliko, the happiness that's always there? You know, as Dharma students, we learn to ask in all situations, you know, particularly when we can pull back a little bit, is there a true happiness? Is this true happiness here, right now?